This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. So as you can see here, we actually have a treat for you today. So we have our very own Brett Moses and Dan McMillan, who actually produce and edit the show Inside the Wolf's Den, our podcast, here with us today. And boy, do they have a story. But thought I would give them a proper introduction, though. So Dan McMillan has been working in the entertainment industry for almost 25 years, editing, directing, producing, and shooting TV shows and movies. Dan is an Emmy Award-winning television editor, helping create such popular shows as NBC's Extreme Makeover Home Edition, NBC's The Steve Harvey Show, Discovery Battle Boats, and currently America's Got Talent on NBC. Most recently, Dan produced, edited, and directed a short film called The Garage. The film just finished a journey on the film festival circuit and has garnered over 60 awards, including the short film Best Editing and Best Directing. And Brett Moses is a sales and marketing and advertising expert, often recognized for his early work as an actor in national commercials for Pace Picante Sauce and Nissan. His credits include the NBC soap opera, Passions, and favorite television shows, Buffy the Vampire Slayer on the WB and Fox's Melrose Place. Brett has now built a successful career as marketing executive with two decades of experience in strategy, promotions, and branding, both online and off. He has led teams responsible for creating advertising campaigns and digital marketing initiatives for companies all over the world. He is the marketing director, of course, for all our entities. Brett and Dan produced this podcast. However, it's not their first project together. Dan's hard-fought journey in Hollywood led him to a fateful friendship with our show's producer, Brett Moses. Together, they produced, wrote, and directed Noble Things, a Fox Movie Night special, extended run on Showtime, and a Turner Classic Movie, a 2009 feature film that follows the life country music singer Jimmy Wayne Collins. Jimmy finds himself adrift and homeless, forced to return home to the piney woods of the southeast Texas. Jimmy will face his imprisoned brother, his dying father, and the demons he left behind. The pair spent 10 years of their lives through the trials and tribulations creating the gritty independent film. Wow. The film also stars Ryan Hurst, Michael Parks, Dominique Swain, and the country music star Leanne Womack. The soundtrack for the music-driven movie was produced by country star Clay Walker and included performances by Mark Chestnut, Tracy Byrd, Bo Bice, Day Gray, and Tracy Lawrence. As fate would have it, the film will soon get second life on the streaming, and they're here to share their story today. So that is a lot, but I think it's important to hear all that because we saw the movie Noble Things, I think a couple of years ago, and it was pretty cool. And then just hearing the story from Dan and Brett, right? We were actually at dinner a couple weeks ago, and them just reminiscing on, you know, what they actually went through was pretty incredible. So we thought having them on the show to tell the story of, you know, all of that, what they went through, the grit, determination, all of that.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, we just want to say we owe you guys both a ton of gratitude for all that you do. Like Joni and I come up here and talk, but you make us look good.
You make
it actually happen. And we really appreciate, you know, all that you guys have done. And you guys both are very busy in your career. So thank you for doing this. And again, it's an honor to have you on the show. Cause I think, just based upon that evening that we spent at dinner, I was like, man, this is entrepreneurship.
We should be recording right now.
And it correlates, so to what you have gone through, you know, just creating the movie correlates to building a business.
Yeah.
Really. And we're going to get into all that. But again, thank you guys for being here.
Yeah. So why don't we start? Why don't you guys give a little background on yourselves, you know, and how did this all get started?
Jeez, Dan?
It was just a friendship, actually. We would just hang out. I had moved out to Hollywood, and my roommate was friends with his roommate, and so we all just started hanging out, and then probably for about a year just going and hanging out together, having a beer, I'd hear these stories, and literally every time there would be a new story, and it'd be even crazier. And so just over time, you keep hearing all these stories, and of course, my brain is just like, well, that's a movie. So he's like, what do you mean that's a movie? Because he was out there to be an actor, and he was, and I wanted to be a director and a writer. And So we just kind of, you know, put our heads together and said, well, this could, we could take all these stories and make them into a movie.
We just had to find a through line, right? but what's funny, if you go back a little bit, first I'll say this is very surreal because I'm usually in that room with you guys. So I'm having an outer body experience. And I'm actually at the same office, so I'm slightly inside of this. And our business development manager, Brandon's there in the chair, and he's doing the switching. So thank you, Brandon. And his qualifier was that he worked at Best Buy for so he's solid. We'll fix it in post if we have to. There's actually a funny story how Dan and I became friends. So we get
you go tell here. You tell it.
So okay, going through first divorce and I lived with my ex-wife and a roommate. She's going to New York. I'm staying in LA, and Dan just moving to LA, and he needs furniture. Well, we're selling furniture. We have a garage sale. Dan buys my couch, my TV, all the utensils, all the plates, the blankets, the towels, everything. It's like a sitcom. He and his roommate bought everything. So I started hanging out at his house, and it felt very home. Like I'm sitting on my couch watching my TV, and it was surreal. So we hit it off from the beginning, and we're able to sort of appreciate where we come from. We had similar, you know, mindsets, and we're both very ambitious and very driven. And he asks incredible questions, very smart. Reminds me of you guys and the questions that you develop for the show. And I'm like, oh, that's, let me tell you about why I did that or how that happened. And I just started telling him stories about growing up in Southeast Texas. And you guys have friends from that area, mm-hmm. the Golden Triangle, the Beaumont area. And I was just telling them about all the country music singers from there and myself growing up there till I was 17. And then I moved to Los Angeles. But in that time period of probably from, I don't know, 13 to 17, my friends and I, we packed a lot in, a lot of adventures. I'm glad there were not smartphones at the time, but we were able to get a lot in, and that's where a lot of the stories came from. Well, what if one of those instances were pushed a little too far, mm-hmm. you know? And Dan and I like to tell stories and write about things that have some sort of like meaning, right, to the human condition. Right. Not just to entertain, but to try to drive and motivate and, I don't know, tell a sentimental story. And that's how it started. And then he brings structure to story. And he still does that now today. Yeah. And so he was able to come up with a through line. And then one day, I think we were sitting on a bar that we had built at his house. And we talked about we couldn't figure out how to weave all these stories together and all these characters with these real life nicknames and such. And then I just said, well, you know, there's a bunch of country music singers where I'm from. And I was referring to Clay Walker, Tracy Byrd, Mark Chestnut, all of which participated on the soundtrack later. I didn't know them from anything growing up. Right. But it was cool because that was like, Dan, I could see his eyes. He's like, that's it. And we're probably ahead of the game. We're probably ahead of the curve. You know, even back then, country genre or cowboy hat genre type, it's mainstream now. It's what people want now. But back then, even it was a little different.
It was an uphill battle. Just to hit back and also on like the talking about our friendship and our bond is we, and I'm sure you guys know as well how driven and ambitious mm-hmm. Mr. Moses is.
Yes.
Well, he's a good salesman because he sold you to buy all his stuff, and then he goes and moves in with you and uses it. So yeah.
There you go.
But both of our, but we definitely meet on that level of just hard work and ambition and just all of it. Cause when all of our friends were wanting to go out and party in Hollywood and all that kind of stuff, we were actually just, we just came out there. We knew why we both wanted to be out there.
Yep.
And so we just sort of started working on the script. And we actually went through, there was a struggle to create the script because it was like a year of writing. Mm-hmm. And then we at the end of it, we actually weren't happy with it. So we actually threw it away and started over and took our favorite parts of what we liked about the original script and then did it again.
That's right. So,
and we weren't afraid to start over again and really put in the work, and we always did. And every time there over the 10 years, like every uphill battle of hurricanes or whatever we're going through. And I'm sure we'll get into that stuff too, but like just all the stuff, we were always on the same page and we always fought to the end to get what we wanted.
But to your point, Sean, we didn't know it. but there was an entrepreneurial spirit that we didn't even know. We just were ambitious.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes, we'll get it done. What do we need? All right, let's go get that. No is not an answer we're willing to take at all. To almost to the detriment, though, of some things in life and some relationships now, as I've grown up and look back, I mean, gosh, we were just, you guys talked about it last week in the episode with Phil Owens about sometimes there are seasons in life where you're just all about the mission. And that was us. Yeah. That was us for sure.
Can you go back even a little bit further for the two of you and just what made you guys get into this industry to begin with? Like, I mean, you both moved out to LA, right? You're not from there. And so,
correct.
And also what you were doing at that time, like, you know, well, before you were planning to make this movie, like what was your career?
Good question. So for me, I was 16 and, I flew up to Dallas for an audition and, second time on a plane. And one of those small puddle jumpers, and I auditioned for a place called the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and it was a pretty prestigious theater conservatory. And they let me in. Somehow I squeaked through. I figured out a way in. I got in, and I couldn't believe it. And I'm like, well, I'm taking this shot because I really didn't know what else I wanted. So I decided at an early age, well, this is what I'm going after, and I'm going to go do this. So I moved out to LA. I had huge culture shock. You know, I was the guy that showed up like Joe Dirt, not kidding, cut off flannel shirt.
I'm trying to picture that.
Man, I'm serious. I had a mullet my mullet was curled in the back. It was so long.
It's come back. So
yeah. Everything 90s is coming back. Yeah. I got out there. It was tough making friends, and I made it through the school and was able to really just dive into the school, learn the craft.
The school is very prestigious. He's being very modest, but it's like Paul Newman and others have graduated from that school. So it's like,
yeah, it's a tough school, and it's tough to get invited back. You got to show good work, gratitude for the craft of acting.
Yeah.
And I was committed, and just like you guys are committed, and that's what I share the kinsmanship with all three of you guys is that I've said it 100 times. All I know is what I'm going after, and I'm going to go after that, and I'm whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. And so I committed to it, and I got through the school, and I was lucky to get an agent and manager, and start having some auditions and getting little nuggets. And but it was a struggle still then too, and then there's actually a broader point to this, but I was lucky enough to get a couple of commercials, but it was once I decided to just be myself, right? Once I stopped trying to hide that I had this very thick accent or that I was really sort of country, Pace Picante sauce, I went to that audition, I was just me. And boom, it took off. And that really gave me the freedom to start thinking about other things. Okay, this could be a real vocation now. This has gone from an idea to actually happening. And through that few years, I was lucky. I was on a few television shows and always just getting that little nugget. And if you're around actors, what you're looking for is just a sign that tells you, I'm still in it. I'm still doing it. You know, I booked this TV show in one season, but at least I had that one last season. And then you start getting even more opportunity. And that's where I got. I was getting some incredible opportunity. But Hollywood wasn't what it is now. You didn't have rock and other ethnically ambiguous type of people. And that's what I was called. My feedback from casting director was, man, we like Brett, but he's ethnically ambiguous. We don't quite know what he is. And for the record, my mother's from Guam, you know, so I'm Polynesian. My dad's side is Caucasian. So, but they didn't know where to put me. I couldn't be pigeonholed. And so that held me back quite a bit.
Yeah.
It was frustrating because there were some, like Dan will attest, we won't say the names of them, some very, very big projects that really were like, oh man, these are career makers, right? Mm-hmm. And to watch them go to who they went to was devastating, okay? And so that's when I was, you know, I would share all that with Dan, like, damn, you know, let's go back then. We smoked, should talk about that now, but let's go smoke and drink some whiskey. This sucked. Let me tell you a story about this, what happened this week. And that's how we bonded and started telling these stories. And it was like at the time too, independent films were kicking off. Right. So you had Little Miss Sunshine, you had Ben Affleck and Matt Damon and Good Will Hunting. You had these stories of these kids that wrote something, developed it, shot it, and got a good cast member, well-known actor to commit to it. Next thing you know, these guys are making it. And so we're like, well, if they can do it, we can do it. Mm-hmm. And so we just went full tilt. And Dan was game. and super talented. And that started the adventure, but that's what I was doing, Dan.
Well, I mean, for me, like, my love of just making movies goes back to, like, it's like the old, they have all these stories about, like, filmmakers. Hey, since I was six, like, I've wanted to make movies, and I've known what I want to do. And I'm actually one of those people. I've just always known since I was a little kid that that's what I love doing. Mm-hmm. I even recently had to, went back to where I grew up, and, my dad moved out here, in Los Angeles, and I went through my house, and I was finding, like, all I did was find these scripts. They didn't make any sense, but and they were scribbled, but they were in script form and like 6, 7, 8 years old. Like, wow. I don't know how I figured out how to write it, but like writing these scripts. And I was always, when I was a kid, like growing up, like shooting, like just taking whatever, if I had a video camera or super 8 millimeter or like whatever I get my hands on, I was out shooting like all the time. And I was editing them together and putting them together. I was taking 2 VCRs. I don't know if the kids today know what VCRs are, but taking 2 VCRs and starting and stopping. Wow. and like cutting it together. And then when I was 14, one of the big things that changed my life was my high school, for some reason, was doing day on the job. And you could choose 3 things. And I said, make movies, make TV shows, and be a lawyer. Like, they said, put something that makes sense on there. And I was like, I'll probably end up like at some law firm, like just taking notes or something. And they came back and
shooting depositions.
I know, right? Well, not even shooting depositions, like just working in a law firm. Like, I don't know. So I ended up, they came back and said, we placed you at a TV station. I'm like, what? You play? I'm like, in the middle of Kansas where I grew up, in a high school, you know, and we were in the suburbs. So it wasn't like we were in, like, you know, the fields with Dorothy and Toto, mm-hmm. but basically, like, it was like the suburbs high school. And I ended up at the local, it was basically a broadcast station that did the city council meetings for the local public. It was a public access thing. And I met, and I'm sure you guys have had that too, both of you. And I know Brett has had 1 or 2 people in your life who kind of changed the course because they open your eyes to a whole different world. Mm-hmm. And the guy who ran the station was this hippie guy named Lindell. And Lindell, like, introduced me to, like music from the 60s and like movies and like movies you never heard of. And like, cause I was into movies, but I was into like mainstream stuff. And he introduced me to like this and that. So it was like, and he, when I came into work, like he let me like just work and work as long as I could and helped out. And he was always game. And so that got me, I worked there for free for like 3 or 4 years and then, in whatever hours I had, and then went to a local TV station. And I was like, you know, 17, 18 and like got in there and then I just kept working and working and working. And so, and then I got into the community like there locally, like, you know, I was very naive and very ambitious. Mm-hmm. And I was also like, I was never scared. That was the one thing that like surprised a lot of people, like, oh, what, how, when you go in those situations, are you scared? I was like, no, I just knew that I could probably figure it out and handle it and just jump in and just try it. And if I fail, I fail. Like, mm-hmm. that's fine. I don't care. I'm just going to keep doing it because I love it so much. And it just kind of happened. And then I went to University of Kansas and went to, they actually have a film school, and it was actually a really good film school. Now they actually have an Academy Award winning teacher there, a guy named Kevin Wilmot, who wrote Black Klansman a few years ago that Spike Lee came out. Uh-huh. And he was actually, his first year was my last year there. And so I got some tutelage from him. But my last year there, I got a phone call from a guy. I said, hey, I'm finishing my film. I'm coming into town from Los Angeles. And I need help finishing it, but I don't have any money. And so, like, he said, do you know anybody? I said, well, do I? Because I knew everybody in town. Because I work with everybody, and I was 17, I was about 21 or 22 at the time. And he came into town, he shot, and he said, look, I can't really pay you, but if you help me out to help me finish my film, to shooting it, when you graduate, you call me and I'll get you a job. And I was like, okay. Yeah. So basically, like, 2 weeks later, I graduated at the end of the semester, and like 2 weeks later, I was out in Los Angeles surfing on some dude's couch that I didn't know, and for like a month, and like kind of just, you know, escalated from there. And then about 3 months later, I met this guy.
Oh, that's an awesome story. I mean, a lot of you are sacrificed, right?
And, oh, yeah.
You know, delayed gratification. I mean, all everything, failures, like everything that entrepreneurs really have to go through.
You just, there was a love and a passion, mm-hmm. and regardless of the outcome, you were going to like see it through, and you enjoyed it. So, and I think there's a lot that can relate to other areas of life like that, where it's, I think you just, I don't know if it's naive, you know, you just, you do what you have to. Yeah. And so.
Yeah. I know when we were at dinner, you talked a lot about the challenges, you know, you faced making this, producing this movie, you know, and why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because I think our listeners would love to hear some of those challenges.
Talk about a brilliant balance of naivete and stubbornness.
Well, I was going to say one of my big things was, you know, you're talking about business earlier and like how we had to create our, like we had, we're like at the time we were just creative people, and he was an actor and I was a filmmaker and like, you know, director and writer and producer, and we're going to create this thing. And then you realize the first step, you realize 90% of it's the business and 10% of it is actually making the movie.
That's exactly right.
So
And so like, we just kind of went for it. And like you said, we're just going to move to Texas. And we, after we wrote the script, we're going to move to Texas. And that worked out for about 8 months. And then we were broke and we're like, okay, what are we going to do? And so literally for the next 3 years, while we were trying to get the movie made, I would drive every 6 months. I could get a job on a TV show and I would drive back and forth to Los Angeles from Beaumont, Texas, and go live out there, find a, you know, now what is called an Airbnb. But like back then it was just like an apartment for rent for 6 months.
some guy's garage, literally.
Yeah, basically. And just like work on TV shows and save it up and then come back and then try to get it done again and then fail and then go back out, you know, and it's just like that. Like I probably did that drive from Los Angeles because it's the 10 and it goes all the way down. I probably did that drive probably like 8 or 10 times, like within those.
Dan was gathering and working for the seed money. We would then take that money to procure everything that we had to do, like rent, infrastructure. Because we're learning business too, right? Yeah. Hire the attorney so that we can get the paperwork drawn up. Well, an LLC? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. How do you do that? So honestly, it's just like what I recognize now is people doing real estate transactions, right? You got to set up the LLC. It was very similar to what I watched you guys do, what we've done. It's interesting. You know, I got a funny story to keep it a little bit entertaining. One that I forgot to share with you guys when we were having the restaurant. Yeah. Dan, this is when we got the casting director's retainer at the casino.
All right. Oh my God.
This is a great story. Okay.
I forgot.
Yeah. So there were so many times when it was almost over. Like we were broke. The dream was over. Nobody wants us to make this movie. We can't get any love. We're going back to LA. Let's just go restart over out there. And, so we get a call from one of our producers, Ruben Neubauer. He's in Los Angeles. He's like, he's German. He calls and he says, "Hey, Brett, we have her." I was like, who do we have? I'm thinking it's an actress, right? For the big role of Claire in the movie. And he's like, "We have a casting director, great casting director." I was like, "Oh, awesome." So a lot of times to get these movies kicked off, you get a prestigious casting director that would help you cast these movies so that it shows like some sort of worth to other actors that commit, because you get a lot of actors that show interest once you're able to get into the agencies, but rarely do they actually commit because we don't have the money to have them commit. So we're still trying to get this casting director and it's like, okay, that's awesome, Ruben, that's great. How much is she? He's like, she has a $3,000 retainer. And I know that's small money. But we're thinking $3,000, that might as well be $100,000. We don't have $3,000. We had like $700 to our name. We weren't going to make the next month's rent. Dan's in LA. I'm in Beaumont. And I was like, "Dan, I got an idea." And he's like, he's grown not to like that. Be calling us.
I just hang up now.
Oh no.
I got an idea. I was like, let me take the remaining money. Let me go to the casino. Let me go to the casino.
Bad idea.
I can make it. He's like, "Well, we don't have anything to lose, and that's the only green light I needed, right?"
Like a movie.
Yeah, man. And it's not even awesome. It was like a Tuesday afternoon. Okay. So I get in this truck and I drive 45 minutes to the casino. It's a riverboat type casino, right? In Lake Charles. And I remember parking in the parking lot thinking, all right, this is it. Trying to get my game on, right? So like, okay, so I'm going to go play roulette. So, oh, this is great. So we go.
Let me play one of the good games.
No, I'm not going to go play black. I'm just going to go play roulette. Well, okay. So I go in there on a mission. And honestly, that 700, well, I had to get gas and I had to eat. So I show up with like $630. I was able to somehow, I turned that into almost $5,000 in the span of about 4 hours.
Hopefully you left.
I did. But it was a combination of like,
again. Well, there was a phone call in there. Yes. where he was just like, I can do more. I'm like, get in the car and get home.
Get home. Not so nice. You're done. You're done. So I was able to get, so I did it. Combination again, that naivete, a little bit of courage and some like, this is what it is. And I actually got on a good roll. And so I cashed out and I was just as happy as can be. I go to the truck and remember this, there weren't cell phones like we have them now. So I had to drive all the way back with all this news to myself. I get back to the house. I call Dan first. And I was like, Dan, I did it. We got it. Boom, boom. We got it. We got the money for Elaine. And he's like, nice. How much you get? I can get more. No, you're done. And so, so that's how that was the seed money that really started the real business part of this. Then once we got like an attachment of someone outside of us that was really in the business, that had access to the actors, had access to the agents and the managers, things changed. And so that little bit of seed money from the casino.
We also, I mean, that was also part of the, you know, ups and downs too, during that time when we were trying to figure out who we were going to be. Cause you know, you have like a list. She said, make a list. And so we made our list. Yeah. And she said, I'm going to just make offers.
Yep.
And we're like, okay. So we started making offers, and then we're making offers like, you know, Ray Liotta and like, I'm trying to remember some of the people, but like
Ned Beatty, there's some huge Ned Beatty ones that guy, he was, well,
did they know you shouldn't say that? Did they know you didn't have any money to pay them?
Well, that was the trick.
That was the other thing is we created an account, and then we talked somebody into putting money into that account just to show, because their agents
I love would it. Actually fake, have to look until at that, you make it, right?
It's basically like an escrow account.
Yeah. So how this works is you learn how you got to make it work. And again, no is not an answer. Mm-hmm. So this is where the business side, you start learning the business side of things. Okay, well, we need an accountant escrow. Well, what does that mean? Well, we need somebody to put up money that sits in escrow. We're going to show them bank account info, balance, those kinds of things. And that gets us in with the agents and managers to say, okay, you can make
you're serious.
You can make our clients money. So we were able to raise the money, $500,000, to put into escrow that opened up access, not just to the casting director, but then the agents, the managers, and really start making some real legit offers. Yeah. And then you raise capital based on the offers that are out.
What was the time frame from, I guess, idea or the start of the writing of the script? I mean, it could have been the first version.
We can just say the overall. So we wrote the script from 2000 to mid 2000 to, and where we kind of got the script that's about 80% of what's on screen now, I think 2003. Yeah. And that's when we decided to drive to Texas. Yeah. And then from 2003 to 2006 was basically like figuring out how to build a business, you know, what kind of structure do we need for a film? Because it's so different, because you have to have these companies, and then you have to have another company that's in control of the other company. And it's just like all this other stuff that we had no idea. And then we created like the binders to go out with the prospectus and all the information. What we also did, the smartest thing that we ever did during that time, was when we were down there, we said, you know, no one's going to really take it seriously unless they see something visually. And so we took like, I think it cost us like $300 or $400.
Yeah.
But we basically took a camera that I had and Brett and whatever we could find and made a teaser trailer that was basically like a movie that didn't exist.
Yeah, that was my dad and my brother and we're in it. And
all of your friends that are actually in the movie now as well as your friends.
Yeah, we use that to set tone. So when you brought that with a prospectus that we developed through our lawyer, we knew that we could raise the capital. So yes, so from about 2003 to we released in 2009, But you got to keep in mind, much like an athlete's career, and say, for example, just hypothetically like NFL, right? Those years are ticking. And if you're not involved in the industry, they forget about you and your years pass by. So there's this risk that you're not going to work again, or you've lost. Now I'm without an agent. I'm without a manager. Dan is now committing this time. And so you're not tracking anymore in LA. So the hope is that you somehow sort of leapfrog after a project like this, not just to where you were, but well beyond, right? Mm-hmm. For opportunity.
Yeah.
And then what happened was a little thing called the economic crisis. And, we released this passion project in the middle of that. And
right.
So there were absolute ramifications to it.
And also along with what we're all used to now is like Prime and like Netflix and streaming. And it's like a regular place to go and they're looking for content. Well, we were at the exact moment of the transition from DVDs to streaming, and they had no idea how video on demand, how to make money off of it, how to use it as a platform to make, how to capitalize on it.
Yeah.
And this was all done during the hurricane too, right? There was a big hurricane that came through.
That's right.
Two years
of hurricanes. So the first time we had raised capital to shoot, we had had the actors committed, we had crew in town, and country music stars like Clay Walker was on board to produce the soundtrack. Like it was going.
Yeah.
It's a machine.
It was a machine, and it had even bigger steam that it later had and was becoming something different, which was great at the time. And then Hurricane Katrina happened in New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
Well, we happened to be doing pre-production and we had rental homes in Beaumont. And so we had my family members and their friends and others coming in to evacuate from Katrina into our infrastructure. We opened, there's a lot of behind the scenes footage about that part. And then a month and a half later, Hurricane Rita. Mm.
Not even that. It was like about three to four weeks.
Yeah. Starts to put a bullseye on the Beaumont area. It hadn't been hit in decades. So it was like the odds were always stacked against us. And so we evacuated with my family.
We sent everybody, all the crew home. And it was just like, we said, we don't know if we're going to shoot. Thanks for trying out, but maybe next year.
We thought it was over. So we evacuate. And my son is 1 year old at the time. And we all just share in a hotel up in Fort Worth, wondering, number one, are we going to have homes to come back to? My family, and many of them had their homes. My dad had a tree right through his home. I mean, and my mom and dad, there was a lot of devastation that got beyond the fact that we weren't going to be able to shoot this film. Correct. It was much deeper than that. People were really hurt and people were financially strapped after Rita. And it was devastating to the whole area. So we just thought, well, we'll never, we lost it. And then that didn't last very long. And we remounted and figured out, how can we do this? How can we pick up the pieces? They'll rebuild. Dan went back to LA to work. I think it was a Extreme Home Makeover at the time. Yeah. And I went to work pulling cable and Cat 5 cables and added to my brother and dad. And we were like, in the evenings we'd get together and we would FaceTime before FaceTime was even a thing. It was like original FaceTime. And we were continued to make our offers and raise capital based on the offers and pay brokers in Dallas a lot of money to make those connections. Yeah. And then I would drive up and back and forth to Dallas to do it. And we finally were able to get the money and to get the cast that we were finally able to set a production date and shoot.
That's a story or like a, cause can you, I can't imagine the frustration or
the stress. I mean, just hearing about it like kind of stresses me out.
But just to get that far, right? And even have the actors there and have all this money raised and then all of a sudden like stuff that you can't control, it's out of your control, just totally stops it.
And I think a big part of it for us, especially we were friends and we were in it together, whatever happens. And it's like, I think in these situations, and I'm sure you guys know that like anytime any kind of, things pop up with that are like, have to do with, slowing down or stopping the wheels on something. Like if you're there by yourself, it's really hard, but if you have somebody to bounce off of and who's in the same boat and who can identify with you. Yeah. And if you're having a bad day, they pick you up. And then if you're having if he's having a bad day, you're picking him up. And we were just always, attached to the hip trying to get this thing done.
That's so true. I love that.
Yeah. Was there a point where you guys ever just said, you know what? Maybe this is like God's way of saying, we shouldn't do this? Like, there's many, or was there several?
What a good question. I haven't.
That is a great question.
Yeah, there was.
There was a lot of low points. There's a lot of things that hit you in the gut. But I think down deep, both of us knew that come hell or high water, this thing was going to get made. And we were like, if it got made for $50,000, or if it got made for $1 million, wherever it was, however we were going to make it, and if it was going to be a big crew, a small crew with known actors, with a bunch of local people, whatever we were going to do, it was going to get made. And you just kind of push it up a hill.
Yep.
You have to have some amnesia about things, right? And so, and that's any business. And that's what I've come to learn in the interviews that you guys do with other entrepreneurs, is that you got to have resiliency, man. And you got to be able to bounce back. You can't be like sociopathic about it, but you got to have that drive that pushes you through those low moments, because they do come. We lost a lot of momentum with the hurricane. The movie was much smaller after that. Admittedly, it was a smaller thing. It didn't have the momentum of a lot of the pedigree in Hollywood that it built up to that point. Whether it was the agencies or managers, it was a buzz. There were people talking about it. We were able to get to A-list actors, which is a rare thing. Just the screenplay alone. And so we had ideas, grandiose ideas. And when that bubble burst and you start making offers, you're having to talk yourself into getting excited about it. But then you get legitimately excited about working with these actors.
Yeah.
It's funny, the roller coaster that you go on. And not to mention, Joni, you said something about it, stressful just listening to.
Yeah.
And it's stressful when I walk down memory lane on this thing, because there were some moments where it was like too stressful, not just for Dan or myself, but my family, Dan's family, friends, spouses or in Dan's case, fiance. There were times where it was just too much. It was too much. Mm-hmm. And some could still argue legitimately so, that it was just too much of a commitment. But if you loved Dan and me, you knew that you were in for this thing, and we were down for it no matter what it took. I mean, literally, there were times when our health suffered because we were so committed to it. But you hear about movies like that, Monsters Ball and others, where the filmmakers just were so committed to getting it done that you sort of lose track of, not reality, but sometimes
reality things. Moments that you're like, I can't believe I'm doing this, but we're gonna just keep doing it.
Yeah,
if you ask, come this far, you can't quit now.
You end up asking a lot of those people around you to sacrifice a lot so that you can realize your dream, in hopes that somehow this is a positive business experience for everybody, especially the investors.
Right? Yeah.
And so, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Can you talk about, because I mean, obviously we have a lot of listeners that are real estate or entrepreneur driven. Just the, because I know that you explained the business aspect of it, and then aside from the artistic part of it, but the raising capital is a whole nother, I think, third leg to this, or third wheel to this whole thing equation. I know there's some good stories there as well.
Man, the raising of the capital became something that I discovered that I had a knack for, a talent for, that I loved more than acting.
Yeah.
Or the business side of things. It's one of those, as I grew up and grew into the role of, Dan had his role and I had my role. Mm-hmm. I had to go find money. I had to, how are we going to do that? Put me in a room, just get me in a room and we'll get this done. And you have to have that sort of mindset. And that's the mindset that I talk with our business development manager that's hitting the buttons right now. And so, yes, raising capital for anything, any entrepreneurial endeavor, is going to be tough, but you got to have your facts and you got to have confidence, because they can seek it. They can sense it when you don't. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, the first thing you do is you get a line producer to help you set the budget, and for a company, it's something different, right? Okay. What's our budget? What do we need to get kicked off to get started? And so we hired a line producer to help us figure that out. So we came up with a number. I was like, damn, that's a big number. How are we going to get that? We're going to need some help. Yeah.
We have to go. We rewrote some scenes based on the numbers.
So what was that initial number?
The initial number The initial number was about 3.4 to start. So you have above the line and below the line numbers, Sean. And so overall, you're looking at a total endeavor. When you talk about the soundtrack, all of it, And not to mention that we produced, this is so cool, we produced the score in Prague, right? So there's all kinds of weird elements to this story, but we're at 6.2 total. And so it's a lot to raise from nothing. We didn't, Dan or myself or a fan, we didn't come from independently wealthy money that was like, hey, let me cut you a check to get it started. We had to figure it out. We paid a lot of money to brokers in Dallas. We had a lot of friends that came in. We had a lot of acquaintances that heard about it, that talked about it. Some that scrutinized really hard. Some that was sort of a mentor as far as, okay, I see what you're trying to do. You can't do that. Here's what you needed. So there were people that would come in, even if for a season, right? You know, season of life, people that would come in that would help us and mentor us and help us figure out how much money we absolutely had to raise. In the meantime, we're living really lean, right? There's like my family, my wife, my son, Dan, a couple other roommates in one house. Like we're living lean, all focused on this and raising capital all over the country, going back to LA, going to New York, going to Chicago, going to Texas, Dallas, you name it. We would wake up and like, where are we going? Let's go get this. And then there is a story about, not to get long-winded here.
It's a good story.
So our line producer comes into town. Okay. We're weeks away from shooting. And we got some cast that's there. We're doing some rehearsals. And like, I'm nervous because I've got like, wow, there's Ryan Hurst from Remember the Titans. He's a star. he's in town. Like, he's here. We're doing this. You know, I got Tracy Byrd and Clay Walker. They're committed to doing this soundtrack or helping us. Tracy Byrd ended up in the movie. It's like, man, the stakes are high now. We're out there. We're doing it. So, but we didn't have all the money to get going. We had a little problem. We had a little issue getting some insurance because of the hurricanes that we didn't foresee. And we had to spend a little more money there. And line producer comes in town and we got producers at the production house and he's asking our other producer, Ruben, he says, hey, where's all the money? There's no money here. I'll let Dan tell the rest because he's the one that was there and he
heard. I was actually in the other room. I could hear the conversation while they were having it. I wasn't eavesdropping, but it was just like they were having this conversation early in the morning and we were the only ones in the house. And it was so funny because like he's just like, where is it? And I knew that all the rest of the week we were have checks coming in. And I knew that we had a couple of checks in the drawer and our producer did too. And Ruben went into the bedroom and was like, took out like the biggest check we had, which was like 50,000. He comes out and he goes, look, I got like 10 more of these waiting here. We just haven't cashed them because we're so busy trying to produce the movie. So let's get off our back.
Yeah, that was a crazy day. So Dan calls me. He's like, hey, Calvin's asking for the money. Where's the money? And I'm like, okay. So I remember being parked in a driveway going, okay, I got to get $300,000 today. Wow. Just, this is it, all of it, but this gets us through this day. All right. Where are we go? How are we going to do this? You know? And we did, that was a heck of a day. And the thing is, it sounds more outlandish than it really was because you know, Sean, when you're raising money, you have a lot of people that say yes, but actually cutting the check, that's a whole nother thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they want a glad hand, just say, yes, this sounds cool. This sounds great. I want to introduce you to my cousin who was an actor, my nephew, my sister, my girlfriend, whatever the case is. Maybe they can have a part in the movie, but you're noncommittal. There's a real movie. I'm not, you know, committing to that. But yeah, so they get so close and you get around that. And a lot of times you find people just want to be around that circle, but actually getting the check, that's a whole nother story. Mm-hmm. Then getting the check to clear, because you know, we weren't doing ACH payments back then. So it was like it was equal parts trying to get the business side up and then trying to focus as the creative part and the filmmaking side to keep the storyline going, keep the momentum going. It was difficult. Because duty would call. And you'd have to be like, okay, and cut this scene. I got to go meet with somebody because their check isn't in yet, but they're on set because they want to hang out. So we'll get that check today. And so there's a lot of that. And so
that was throughout production too. I mean, it wasn't just at the beginning. I hope we make payroll this week because this person hasn't dropped off this check.
Yes.
You know, and you feel bad as a producer and committing all this stuff, but it's kind of, like, it's just how it is in low budget movies because nobody wants to commit.
Right. Yeah.
But Dan, that's how it is in business, right? It's like you don't always have it all when you need it. Mm-hmm. You know, it, sometimes the it requires something else to happen.
Yeah.
And that was what I learned through this process, is that on the other side, you're thinking, okay, we'll go get the money. We'll raise it. We'll have one or two people that gives us the funding for this, and we'll call them executive producers, and then we'll go. It wasn't like that. It's not that it's sloppy, but it's you're always having to juggle. It's like juggling plate.
I don't remember how many times we've had where we're waiting on a house to close. We need it. You know, you need the cash to pay for whatever that's coming up. But
to get the next one.
Correct.
Sure. I admire you guys, you know, your grit, determination to get it done and, you know, finish it through. But a couple questions I had. Number one, like, would you do it all over again? Right. And then also, is there anything that you guys would have done differently?
God, that's deep. Dan, I'll let you go first.
The first question is, without hesitation, I would tell us wholly do it 100% over again.
Yeah.
Make all the mistakes, make all the whatever happen, because it was like, it was a life changing thing. You know, it was like in every aspect of it, not just as like a path of your career, but like you can say that I did that. I made that. Mm-hmm. And that no matter what happens in life, that I actually did all that. And having learned all that stuff, I know now that even on my hardest day on any show that I do now, it's never going to be that.
You went through all of that. You
know, there were days I can't believe like an example of a week is like when we were shooting, it would be like we'd have a 6-day week and they're 12-hour days, usually 14 to 16. And the first 3 days are during the day. And the last three, because we have night shoots, are at night. Yeah. So like you're like, you know, the first 3 days you have your 14-hour days, then you sleep until 10 if you're lucky, and then you got to prep each shoot day, and your shoot day starts at 10 o'clock and it goes till the next morning until you run out of light,
or
darkness.
Yeah. See, one of the reasons that we shot it, and one of the reasons that I played the lead, because he was in 84 of 86 scenes. Mm. Okay. And so that means full commitment, tough under the budget that we're at to try to get somebody else. And again, I was trying to do that leapfrog thing that you see actors do. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, I would do it differently. I'd have played another supporting role so that I could have been a better producer. Mm-hmm. I could have been a better creatively, more there with Dan. It is an all-consuming role. But at the end of the day, I feel like we made something that what we set out for. We wanted to make something that was, what did we say, visually stunning and emotionally devastating, right? Like, we're not making comedies. We love them, but there's some funny moments, but that's, we wanted to make something that had a heartfelt impact. And for that, we made it, and I feel like it holds water. We just watched down the 4K version that they're re-releasing, and I felt like, damn, Dan, it holds water, even 17 years later, and we wrote the hell out of it. Good job, buddy. So there's an appreciation for it now.
That's awesome.
But I feel like, that's a great question. Would I do it over again? I learned so much about business that brought me to where I'm at now. I fell in love with that side that allowed me to be a better father than I would have been as an actor. Yeah. You know, if I just went back to LA and stuck that out, it was hard to do both. And Dan knows my type of personality. If I'm an actor, I'm gonna be an actor, and it's a little too all consuming. For me, it was too ego driven. For me, it was all about me and I wanted to be a good dad. Yeah. So I wouldn't be the dad that I am if I didn't stop that career and enter another one. But at the same time, it introduced me to the business side of things that I love and the challenges of that. Yeah. And at the same time, I asked a lot of my family, both my mother, my father, my brother, my wife, my son, didn't know what he was sacrificing at the time. I probably asked too much of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
So would I change that a bit? Yeah. And what I would go back and tell myself then is that slow down. It's all going to be okay. It's all going to be okay. Even if you don't make this, it's going to be okay.
That's deep.
And I didn't think that at the time. Mm-hmm. You're wrapped up in it and you're like, it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
And sometimes you could argue that you have to have that mindset, but I won't go there again with anything because I want to be more there for my family.
Right. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That's a great segue into, you know, when and how did you decide to pursue another type of career in the career?
Well, I think it's, I don't know if so. I've struggled over the years to sell a business because I feel like my and I don't want to say identity because that's a bad, but there's a part of it. And then I don't know. I've struggled with this over the year. And so, how did you get to that point where you knew you could walk away from it?
Yeah,
man, that's good. That's a tough one because sometimes you know, you think back and I gave it my all. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when I was an actor, boy, it was full commitment, full tilt, you know, and whatever it took. But I faced headwinds like I alluded to a while ago that were beyond my control. And I didn't like that part of it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I didn't want to go back and be at the whim of casting. And I think for me, it was when I became a dad that shifted. And I didn't even know it. It took me going through the process of my son growing up. And I traveled a lot after we shot the movie to raise more capital for post-production, soundtrack, you name it. We had to go do it. It's all over the country. And I had moved my wife, now ex-wife, to Santa Monica. And then I was gone most of the time. And so that was tough. And I missed a lot of that walking and talking and those things. And I wasn't becoming the dad that I wanted to be. And at the same time, I had grown real, really close with Michael Parks, who plays my dad in the movie. Mm-hmm. And he saw it happening too. He was like, you're becoming me, or you're becoming a version of not what you wanted to be, what's important to you. He called me out. Yeah. Michael would do that. Wow. If he liked you, he would call you out. And he's like, you're not the dad that you need to be. Mm. And I was like, ugh. So it was having epiphanies like that, Sean, and really realizing that for me, even when I was going to the acting school that I went to and getting out and bouncing around town to auditions, I used to get into clubs in LA telling them that I was Dean Cain's little brother, my friend. I always thought of it as sort of an athletic career. You know how they go in, they have 8 to 10, 12 years and it's it, right? Yeah. They go on to be do something else, an entrepreneur, whatever it is, own a business. I kind of always thought of it like that anyway for me. I didn't want to be in my 40s and 50s and it being the artist, it just wasn't me. And so I knew that the time was ticking, it was transitioning. And then you have to take a harsh look at where you're at after a project like this and say, I have opportunity on the other side of things, being recruited on the business side for those talents that could work well for other industry. And it made perfect sense. And I'm glad I did, because I really feel like I'm happier now. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I decided I wanted to pursue that at 16 years old.
Yeah.
How do you know what you want to do when you're that young and commit so wholeheartedly to something like that, to that kind of extreme? And, you know, you got to allow yourself to grow and grow up and choose other paths. And that's what I did, and ultimately glad for it.
Yeah. There was a story that reminded me when you, I don't know if you guys can share it. You don't have to say names and stuff, but I thought it was hilarious. When you were raising the money, and then they thought you guys were, I think they had committed. I don't know if they had released the money already or not, they thought you guys were crooks or not going to come through with the movie.
Yeah, vetting us.
Without saying yes, yeah. I can speak in brief detail about this episode. It was the only time in my life I've ever been sat down. I didn't know it at the time. Yeah. I wasn't told till years later by someone else, an attorney friend of mine, that said, you know, you were sat down. We're raising so much money so quickly that we had gotten the attention that maybe we're sort of, you know, like Starbuck the Rainmaker. Maybe it's not real. Maybe we're just raising millions of dollars and we're going to take off. I was sat down and thoroughly vetted that was indeed not the case. And what saved me was my naivete, to be honest, that we keep, you know, keep talking about, because I was appalled by the accusation, like, really. And I showed it and I said it, and that little bit of, you know, South Texan came out in me. I was like, no, you put me against the corner. Some cuss words started flying.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Yeah, I stood up in the chair and I was like, look, man, you don't have to do this, but here's who I am. And years later, I found out that was what helped me in that moment.
And
it was shortly thereafter we got all the money that we needed, and we were able to move forward. But I think the story overall is it's one of, like, just stick-to-itiveness, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're making a movie, whatever it is. And then at the same time, being honest with yourself about where it's going. Okay. And making decisions that safeguard yourself and your family, and not leaning too far past your skis, because we did that too often in many occasions.
Yeah. You know, and it was also, you know, we eventually knew where we were going. And so once we formed the foundation for the goal that we wanted to do with all the business stuff and all that stuff, and just putting all that together, we knew that that's where we wanted to go. And there was, there was no, you know, they always say, you know, if you want to, you know, achieve something, don't have a backup plan. We didn't have a backup plan at all.
No plan B.
And for me as an actor, it was something I could literally hang the hat on and say, okay, I gave that one everything I had. That was, I got to act with Michael Parks, right? I got to be in a real scene with Michael Parks. How many people could say that with Ryan Hurst, Leanne Womack and Dominic? Like, I got to do this, you know, Ron Canada, James Parks, these actors, these great actors that are, you might not recognize their name, but you start looking them up, you're going to start seeing, understanding who they are. And so I was able to be like, I went toe to toe with them, and it was an amazing experience. And Dan got to capture it. We lived the dream, man. And so for me, there was nothing better. There was no more. I was going to go back and try to get a guest spot on Lone Star or something. It just didn't. It didn't reach for me.
Yeah. And it all kind of came around too, because you're talking about the acting, and I was thinking about the directing, because I had some nice compliments from these professional actors who said, "You know what? You're really good at creating an environment where actors can come out and be, you know, and do their thing and just have fun and do the job." And it, like, it kind of, like, you know, after all the effort, after all the things we had to sacrifice, after everything, it kind of said, yeah, we did what we were going to say, you know, what we started out to do. And everybody is complimenting us, you know, on what we on how we were supposed to do it. And it was a very good feeling after all that stuff to be like, yeah, we were kind of right about what we wanted to do.
Yeah. And here's what's sad though, guys, is there's 1,000 stories over the past many years where projects didn't get finished, you know, and it was beyond their control. We just had enough luck and enough, like, I don't know
if you, I mean, you guys
worked pretty hard and
you had many, there were many times that you could have easily said,
throw in the towel,
let's not finish this.
Failure was not an option.
No.
So, and then that's what leads us here is now bringing it back in 4K, you know, it's just sort of ironic, that the pandemic put us in a place where they even want to take this thing that's, you know, released, gosh, 12 years ago, and dust it off, run it through a process, put 4K on it, and put it back on streaming. I mean, that's fun. And then my kids get to see it, you know? And so it gets a little bit of a second life. And so that's cool.
Yeah.
Can you guys, or Dan, can you talk to that? Like, what's happening with the film, and then what you're currently working on with it right now?
With the film itself, you know, we do have the time to really do it right, and I'm working with the distributors and doing a lot of the quality control of making sure that it does get done right, because I have all the elements still of all the different, like, pieces of film, the sound, the this, the that, and I'm tracking it all down because they don't have access to that. And I have a storage shed that's in my backyard. So I had to dig it all out and look through it all and make sure that we're all, you know, that it's all up to snuff, because honestly, somebody who's coming in, they're just trying to make a buck, and they don't care as long, you know, if it just gets out there. And so for us, it's like, we, you know, put our heart and soul into it years ago, and technology's changed and things have changed, and now we have all this great stuff. So let's make it look the best it can and sound the best it can. So that's what I've been kind of doing with it. And then work-wise, you know, it's like Brett was talking about his career after the movie, is mine. You know, it was definitely hard after all the stuff that had happened with the movie afterwards, and trying to figure out, like he talked about family, is like, I've been a bachelor for forever and ever during that time. And so, you know, I kind of had started dating somebody towards the end of the movie, and who's my wife now. And, so I kind of said, you know what, I've kind of lived this life. I kind of need to live a real life for a while and try to figure it out. And I'd always, you know, I still was in the, I, during the whole time of being able to edit and being an editor, I've kind of fell into a craft and kind of found a niche doing that and kept working on reality shows. And it actually paid better than TV shows and movies at some point, because it's consistent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I've worked on probably every kind of reality show there's but it's been a good process because it still teaches me all the time, like story and like and character and just like, just whatever, like, it, I'm always learning still. So, you know, I still do that, And I just finished America's Got Talent, and now I'm going on to the next season of American Ninja Warrior. But I'm still, like, right now I'm writing another script. You know, I'm you know, always still in it and still for the fight, and like whatever happens happens, but I still enjoy it. So I'm not gonna, you know, that love of that passion for me, just along with Rhett as well, you know, was always my thing, and I have you know, still there. And my wife, what, you know, after that she goes to bed and the kid goes to bed, I go write for an hour. You know, sometimes you just gotta do that.
Yeah, so, that's so great.
I'll say this, it's cool that they are going to sort of re-release it there and see where it goes.
Yeah.
And because up to this point, so we output at the end of the day, Sean, Joni, you're left with 35 millimeter canisters, about six of them. Okay. And they've been living in my closet for 12 years. We keep them off the coast. We keep them separate. So Dan has a set on the West Coast. I got a set here in Texas. And so we've been looking at these things in storage sheds and closets for the past 12 years. So it's nice that they'll get it back out there.
That's
to be
really
seen.
Cool.
And so this is going to air again on Amazon Prime, correct?
Yeah. At least there may be more. See how it goes. But yes, Amazon Prime.
Yeah. So for our listeners, it's called Noble Things. So make sure we had a family night and watched it with our family.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. So how can people get a hold of both of you? And if they want to reach out, if they have interest in films or opportunities and stuff like that, how can you guys share how people can reach out and get in touch with you, either social or direct?
Go ahead, D.
Well, I have my social media on, and I have a website. It's www.danmcmillan.com. Cool. And you can contact me in my email and stuff. You can see my work as well as on there as well.
Awesome.
So, yeah,
love it.
And Brett? I'm pretty easy to find. You can find me at InsideTheWolfsDen.com. Brett@htownrpm.com. I mean, if I can give anybody some sound advice on it, I will, you know, so they can reach out and ask any questions. I'm not as much on social these days as I used to be, but yeah, they can reach out. I'd be glad to help and give anybody any advice on either acting or, you know, pursuing that craft or raising money, whatever it is.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, like Sean mentioned earlier, we truly appreciate you guys and what you've done for us on Inside the Wolf's Den. I mean, this was an idea as well. So many of you guys know the story, right? We actually were in Mexico in a hot tub discussing. Actually, we met Brett and ended up finding out he was from Beaumont area, looking to move back to Houston, right? And that's how we met. And we told him we wanted to start a podcast. And this guy just ran with it, right? Yeah. So. Yeah.
I got a guy. I know a guy that can do that.
Yeah.
He does a bunch of big time shows. And
yeah. So we're on, this is episode 143, Dan. And so 143 in, it's been fun. And I get to scratch that itch and at the same time go home at the end of the day. But I will say that I love where it's headed. I love working with all three of you guys. It's fun. It's like two worlds colliding. Yeah, it's been neat over the past couple of weeks.
Has been.
So, you know, we'll continue to work hard. And I'm looking forward to seeing where Inside the Wolfsden goes.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, we appreciate both of you, like Joni said. And I think this is going to be awesome. I think, I think this will be probably one of our highest viewed and rated shows. So, thank you again. And everybody, please share this. I think there was so much nuggets and it was entertaining and fun. And so I'm looking forward to when this drops. So
awesome.
Yeah. We'll see you
all. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
See
you. Thank you for having me. Really
good seeing you, Dan.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there. Talking. But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolfsDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.